Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Right, you know what time it is? It is 9 o'clock Eastern time, which means it's time for the number one sports talk show on Saturday morning. That's right, it's The Balance. My minions, my name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente, your fearless leader to bring you through all the world of sports. This past week, we've got Cliff Tanner from Radio Speed Talk standing by, going to be talking with us a lot. Everything that's going on in racing, obviously a big week with Daytona racing going on out there. Some IMS and IndyCar and short track conversation right around the corner as well. And at 9:30, we go into college Saturday. Yeah, football's over, so we're going to move on into college hoops. And we have a lot to talk about with college hoops. Coming up on College Saturday, you never know who might stick around and talk some college hoops for us. But then from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, we have dedicated our final hour to playoffs. That's right, the NFL playoffs have arrived. Well, they did arrive last week, but we're going to say that the real NFL playoffs have arrived. Playoffs?
Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Well, we're definitely going to be talking about playoffs. Peyton Manning and the Baltimore Ravens, minus 11 degrees this morning in Denver. So we'll dive into that conversation. Jeff Kurtz and Gene Walker joining us for that conversation, guys. We have a great show packed for you, as always, right here on the Balance Radio Network. And you can join in the conversation. 917-889-8516 is my digits. You can just give us a call, and we'll jump right into the conversation at hand, whether it be with myself, Cliff. I think actually Kenny's going to join us today and talk some college basketball. Thanks for him just coming up off the bench and being the next man up. We'll get into some college basketball, some college hoops talk, and, of course, all NFL playoffs from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And we have a lot to break down, the possible Super Bowl scenarios, the playoff scenarios. We'll look back at the Colts and the Ravens this past wild card weekend. But, guys, the NFL playoffs really do start this weekend, and they start with the Denver Broncos and the Baltimore Ravens, so we're definitely going to get into that. Who's your Super Bowl pick? What do you got plans for the Super Bowl? So, guys, I'm going to tell you what. You don't want to go anywhere. We'll be right back, because standing by is Cliff Tanner from Radio Speed Talk. We're going to talk everything that goes fast.
My opinion. Walk through cockpit doors and roam all over Coliseum floors. Got set on stage at Live Aid. All the people gave and the poor got paid. And I'm a speaker.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana Water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution. IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis,
specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
All right, my race fans, it is that time of the day. Whenever you hear, give me some fuel, give me fuel, give me fire, that means the only person that can give us fire is the guys from Radio Speed Talk. And joining us today, one of the founders and forefathers of Radio Speed Talk, Mr. Cliff Tanner and his mighty majesty joining us, sir. How are you?
Wow, forefathers, man, I'm telling you. Woo.
It was either that or foreplay. So I thought I'd give you credit on the forefathers.
Either way, or, it works, right?
Either way, or maybe you're one of forefathers that are yet to be determined based on a DNA test. I'm not sure.
Oh, come on! I haven't been on that show yet, but.
Well,
everything's going pretty good, buddy. What's going on?
Man, I'll tell you what, we're going to talk some racing today. We've got a lot going on. Obviously, right around the corner, we've got NASCAR, and we got some stuff coming up with Short Track. And obviously, IMS is, finally decided, hey, guys, we're going to get with the year 2013 and conform with the American Disabilities Act. We're going to get into that conversation. And really, most importantly, I want to find out why the heck did it take them so long. But we will get into that. But most importantly, I want to know what's going on Radio Speed Talk this week, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what, we kind of went out of the box a little bit and talked about the 24 hours of Daytona. We kind of gave a preview a little bit about the testing coming up in Daytona that's been going on the last couple of days. It turned into be quite an interesting weekend so far. We talked some CRA. CRA getting ready to start their 61st year. And last year was very exciting. And, you know, as you know, and we talked about this before, and this is something that you want to do too, but talking about the lower series and the guys up and coming, man, I'm telling you, that's where it's at. You want the excitement, you got to go to that. That's the bottom line.
Oh, absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. That's for sure. And obviously, are you with me, Cliff?
I'm with you.
we're having all kinds of issues today with our phones and whatever the heck is going on with our phones. But let's talk a little bit about the short track and the CRA and the ARCA series. Obviously, one of the biggest curtain openers to any race season in recent years, anyways, has been the Champion Racing Association, or we call them CRA, sanctioned speed test. The 2013 version will swing open its doors on the 2013 racing season for both ARCA and CRA, the Super Series. And, of course, you've got the Jags and the CRA All-Stars Tour at the Watermelon Capital Speedway in Cordell, Georgia on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 25th, 26th, and 27th. And I tell you what, Cliff, this is not only this the event of one of the first big races of any race season, but it's also an opportunity for some of the top drivers representing this series to get out there and showcase themselves this year. So let's break that down, especially when we have a lot of fans out there that really like, huh, CRA, ARCA, what is that? Talk with us a little bit about what that is. And, of course, the 2013 Speed Fest down there in Georgia.
Well, basically, when you talk in the CRA and JAGS All-Stars and ARCA, actually ARCA and CRA is kind of combined now a little bit. But what it is, it's the young kids. Well, I shouldn't say that. There are some guys that's been racing for 50 years in that league. But essentially, it's kind of like a learning curve. It's I would say probably about two steps below Nationwide and maybe a step below what Nationwide is. But a lot of young talent comes in. They learn a lot. I mean, we got 12-year-olds racing at some of this stuff, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. It's a good stepping stone to learn how to race, and it's just quality racing. And you want to talk about excitement. You look at some of the CRA series last year. You look at the ARCA series last year, the Jags. all of those came down pretty much to the last weekend. And you want to talk about, you know, you go to a NASCAR race, you got a big racetrack, and granted, it is fun. It's a great experience to have. But you want to get close to your drivers. You want to see some close action. You want to see some great racing. You want to see some close, tight points races. Those are the places to go. And I'm telling you what, it's the unofficial opening of racing. You know, they don't get enough credit for it. But, yeah, that Speed Fest is going to be a great show to watch. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how all these 13, 14, 15-year-olds did last year, how well they're going to come back and see the new crop coming up. So I'm telling you, if you've never been to one of these places, find one close to you, get out and check it out. I guarantee it, you'll have a great time, and it is cheaper. So, you know, you can more afford it for your family as well.
Well, absolutely. Cheap is good, especially in today's economy. And obviously, they've got the part of it going on down there is the Snowball Derby, which is pretty interesting in itself. And so talk with us a little bit about the Snowball Derby, and then we're going to talk a little bit about our feature track this week, feature short track. But talk to us a little bit about the Snowball Derby.
Well, you're talking the Snowball Derby that happened back last month, or are you talking about Speed Fest?
Well, I'm talking about the Snowball Derby that happened last month.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize. It in transcending into the – see, I didn't even do my own prep work. Yeah, you threw me off here. I had to pause what I was doing in my notes there, so I will take the blame for that. The Snowball Fest that happened last month – and transitioning that into the 2013 Speed Fest. We'll go with that.
All right, well, we can do that. again, the Snowball is one of the biggest races. It was the last race of the year. You know, they finish and they start here in this series. But the Snowball Derby is one that it's like winning the Daytona to them. And, you know, we had a great race this last time, and 16-year-old Eric Jones came out of nowhere and won it. He's been a strong guy coming through, but, I mean, you had the Kenseth boy and Elliot and all them other guys were coming through. It's just a great series. It's a great learning curve for all them guys and good quality racing. The Snowball does never disappoint. It's always an exciting race, and Eric Jones did a tremendous job coming out, winning his first feature, and what a feature to win for your first.
Well, absolutely. You talk about Eric Jones at the Speed Fest of 2013. It's an excellent opportunity. Obviously, he's from Michigan, and you know, probably been racing snowmobiles. That was probably his early developmental years, but. You know, his first live racing action since his historic win over NASCAR Sprint Cup Series star Kyle Busch at Five Flags Speedway in Pensacola, and that was in Florida just over a month ago. So you look at that. There's an up-and-coming driver that's on his way to bigger and better things.
Well, I got to tell you what, he's become one of my favorite guys. I've interviewed him two or three times, and you know, it's a very unique story. He never raced until he started in this series, which I thought was kind of interesting, and he just picked it right up, and usually you see the father get behind him, but his mother actually pushed him to get into this, and we talked to one of our guests all the time, Steve Minnick Sr., who is a crew chief for a lot of area racers as well, and Kenny and I had the opportunity to watch him race down at that Winchester, and he took the lead in a Jegs All-Star race. And just checked out, and you know, Minnick Sr. turned around, looked at us, and he goes, "This race is over." And unfortunately, he broke a back rear axle, so he didn't finish. But I'm telling you, he's coming in good. He's going to be strong in the ARCA series this year, which he's going to be running more of with Venturini Motorsports. So this is going to be a good jump start to what's going on. But look out for Elliott. Look out for Kenseth. All them other young guns are going to start making some real noise this time, and now that they've got a little bit of experience under their belts.
Well, absolutely, and I think you and I have certainly had this conversation off mic and maybe perhaps on microphone, but certainly the ARCA and CRA series are your future NASCAR drivers, so get an opportunity to go out there and check them out. And one of the places that you can check those out here regionally here in Indiana, of course, check the World Wide Web for a track close to you, because there almost every state has a short track where ARCA and CRA can get into. The good thing about them being a young developmental team, they don't have a lot lot of stuff that NASCAR has to take with them. So it's not of an expensive show to put on. And like you said, it's not as an expensive show to go see as a spectator. But one of them is right up the road here from Indianapolis on 69 is the Anderson Speedway. I know you've probably been there yourself. And they just released their 2013 schedule. Obviously, a schedule is packed with many special events. But one of the late model crown events, late model weekend is back for the second consecutive season, and that's in July. And also other special weekends on tap for the 2013 is the on Saturday, April 13th and 14th. But on that Saturday, the ARCA CRA Series late models will also do battle there as well. So, now, Cliff, I know you get around us a lot of these regional local tracks. Talk with us a little bit about Anderson and what goes on up there on 69 at Anderson Raceway.
Well, first of all, I hate No, you're fine. I hate to say this, but this is one track I've not been to, but I have watched events on TV that is on my agenda for this year to get out to more of those recently. But Anderson's been around for a while, and they have a lot of great racing down there. And again, I mean, it's right off of 69, not too far. Anybody can find it. And if you ever get an opportunity, go down there and check it out. They got the Little 500 Festival, and there are all kinds of good things going on down there. And they actually make some national TV down there. So it's a great track. Get a chance. Get down, check it out. And you go see some good, fast racing when you get the CRAs and you know, a lot of the Supermodel series like that. It's always, always excitement. And, you know, when you're looking at a small track like that, you're going to see a lot of good racing.
Well, they claim that they're the world's fastest high bank quarter mile oval, and I had an opportunity to go out there and watch Josh Timmerman this past summer. Had a great time doing that and hanging out with Josh and his team and hopes for family. And I apologize, I probably got that wrong, but the charity that he works for. So yeah, get a chance to check them out. Their local number here is 765-642-0206. You can check them out online as well, and I'll make sure Michelle gets it up on our social media. Well, let's move on to the big boys. NASCAR testing out there in Daytona. We saw a little bit of maybe a what's to come with these 2013 car series in the testing, obviously doing some live testing out there. And that was kind of a neat thing to watch. But Dale Earnhardt Jr., Marcus Ambrose, and, well, just everybody in the field got all tangled up yesterday, Cliff.
Well, I got to tell you, that was kind of an interesting thing. And I don't know, man. I'm not sure. In my opinion, I don't think NASCAR is handling this whole testing thing right, because they don't have a lot of ready available parts for if somebody does crash. And, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was trying to bump drafting. Basically what he said is when he bump drafted with the Chevy, that was fine. Toyota was fine. But there's something about the curve on the front of the Chevys that doesn't match up with the Fords. And he was just trying to see if he could bump draft. It was an accident, but, you know, I'm not sure. NASCAR, I think, handled this whole testing thing wrong. I think they should have allowed NASCAR or teams to have more parts for something like this happening. And it's unfortunate, but it's going to happen. And, you know, Brad Keselowski said it the best. You know, sometimes we learn more by crashing than we do just by testing. And he goes, you know, Junior made that mistake, and he goes, who knows, I could be the next one. That's just the way it goes. But then again, on the other hand, I don't think enough people held Earnhardt Jr. to the fire. But everybody knows he's a great drafting guy, and he was just trying to learn. And I don't think he maliciously did it. But unfortunately, it put a lot of teams out. There was 18 cars out, and 12 cars got damaged. And then most of them had to go bye-bye. And the ironic thing that I found was that Carl Edwards was the only one that had a backup car.
Yeah, that is a little ironic there. and I know we have Kenny Barr also joining us. He's joining us for the college hoop section. But, Kenny, I know you're with us, and so feel free to jump in this conversation about the 2013 series or anything racing at all. Kenny, I didn't want you to feel left out or anything.
Oh, I never feel left out. I just got one thing to say. Keep your bumper off of the damn bumper during practice sessions. You got no business doing that yet. That was scheduled for today for pack running and stuff, although they didn't pay any attention. That was just plain old dumb. Don't do that.
well, there you go.
I agree. I totally agree. And you know, I don't understand why it was done. But, you know, I know everybody wants to learn, but you got to take it slow, especially when you know that that's the only car you got, and you got to be careful. And, you know you're going to be hated if you take out half the field, and that's pretty much what he did.
You know what, Cliff? That proves one thing. They got too much money.
Yes.
I understand. Well, one thing about it is if you stop and analyze what these race teams are facing in 2013, as we get closer and closer to the Daytona 500, which obviously is the kickoff, or of, if you will, of the NASCAR season, NASCAR teams, owners really do have their hands full, obviously, with the new car. And on top of that, the teams are still waiting for the final rules package from NASCAR on what they can and cannot do inside these cars. So, Kenny, I want to lend an expert ear to you. What more, don't you think by now NASCAR should have rolled out the final rules of what you can and cannot do, some of the tech rules? But no, yet NASCAR teams and NASCAR owners and drivers are still waiting for the green light on anything that they could do. And that, how can they be testing if they don't know what they can do?
Yep.
Amen, brother.
I know that this was scheduled long in advance, but they should have had that together where the guys really could do what they needed to do. They probably didn't even need 3 days worth of testing if they had the rules packages all together, but they didn't, and then you got to deal with what you got. It's kind of stupid, but. You know, and here I am, the first two things out of my mouth, I'm bashing NASCAR, and I really don't like to, but there's been a couple of goofy things they've done here in the last couple of days that don't make a lot of sense.
Well, and absolutely, and so I guess, you know, the time will tell. And see what happens, and obviously it's way too early to be talking about this, but going into the 2013 series, guys, does BK have a chance for a repeat championship?
Well, of course he does. I mean, the guy's talented, and if you heard everybody talk yesterday, everybody loves this new car. They just got to get used to it. And this is exactly what NASCAR wanted to do, was put the car back in the driver's hands. And that is what I've been calling for the last, well, since they went to the COT. You know, I don't know, man. He definitely got a chance to do it. But unfortunately, I think, you know, their move to Ford, it may be a little harder for him, because look at him now. Both him and Logano are out, so they can't do any more testing. So he's still got an opportunity to do it. And everybody's on the learning curve here with this new car. And I agree with Kenny. NASCAR did this screwy, and I think it's all wrong. I think they just threw this thing together and without thinking, and it's going to take some time for everybody to get used to it. And I think it's going to be wide open this year, so it's going to be interesting.
Well, absolutely, and obviously, as we get closer to the Daytona 500, we'll be watching, you know, a lot that goes on, and very excited about the Daytona 500. Obviously, you know, they're back in action, and we're gonna be following them here closely on the balance, and I know you will on Radio Speed Talk. Well, while we still got a few more minutes left in our segment here, I want to talk about Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and maybe there's a few things that loom and make me wonder and scratch my head about, but you look at a track. And the leader of tracks, and the founder of them all, where it all started, the granddaddy of them all, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway announced a settlement, and I guess that's where it begins to make me turn my head and say, "Huh, a settlement? This should have been something they should have been ahead of and been proactively doing." But they announced a settlement with the Justice Department on Thursday that calls for updating the century-old facility. And you think about that track being 100 years old. Obviously, they didn't have American Disability Act, Americans with Disability Act in place 100 years ago. But it looks to me like, in all the other things that they do, for their fans and for the safety. This should have been something that was proactively coming a long time ago. And of course, some of the changes are, in addition, are to wheelchair seating in the grandstands. And this all started, I think it was back in, I don't know the exact year, but it was a few years ago where a fan was actually denied access to the pits just because he's in a wheelchair. Well, we know that there is one team owner that just runs his wheelchair anywhere he wants to go, and Sam Schmidt, nothing to say against him, obviously. A legend has produced some great race teams and is certainly one of the top IndyCar owners around. But if they have Sam Schmidt, which is a paralyzed IndyCar team owner, if they have the ability to facilitate the facility for him, they should be able to do the same thing for fans. Cliff, what are your thoughts?
Well, it cost them $70,000 to do this, and you're right. I agree. You know, being the granddaddy of them all, they should have been the first ones to go, hey, let's do this. But there's several reasons, and in my other career, I have ran into this more than once, believe it or not, and I've actually seen businesses close because it's going to cost them too much to switch to that. Indianapolis didn't want to do it, I think, mostly because they didn't want to mess with any assets around because it's such a historical track. And unfortunately, it takes, you know, a situation like that. And the guy had a pit pass, and he had every right to go down through there, and there's no reason why you can't get a wheelchair down there. We've all been on pit row, and we know what it's like. So, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to get there. So I'm not making excuses for them whatsoever because you're right. They should have been right on top of that. And it was 2009, I believe, Tom, is when that happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they're doing something about it now, but unfortunately, in a situation like that, they weren't proactive, they were reactive, and that doesn't make them look in a good light at all.
Well, and I understand that it's things that have to be done. And you look at some of those grandstands, they're made out of wood. And, you know, I'm afraid to just watch a race back on some of those stands. So I can understand. Although, you know, if you want to smell the old smell, go on that far back side over there and check it out there. It's crowded. It's hot. Everybody's grouchy, especially if you're up underneath there.
Right.
So, believe me, I've been all around that track, and it's my right here in my backyard. So I've been to more races at that track. But so there's something to be said to hold on to the nostalgic of the track. But let's bring it up to date, Kenny.
Yeah.
I now know why Kenny has the segment of Did You Know, because his thing is Did You Know? Did you know what? I knew that.
I do have a question though, Tom. Was this wheelchair person or people denied access to the garage area or the pit road?
It was both.
Both?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, garage area, there's gobs of room down there to get around and stuff. Matter of fact, I've seen people, 20 years ago, I've seen people sneaking around a Mario Andretti's pit in a wheelchair. Pit road is kind of a different animal because there's not a lot of room to be moving around and stuff. I don't know that I'd want to be in a wheelchair pit road just for my own personal safety, but yeah, you're right, they need to be proactive and get things going, especially in the grandstands and the fan side of things. I'm a little more guarded when it comes to the actual garage area and the pit road and stuff, because I see people who aren't disabled get run over and get hurt by other people who aren't paying attention to what's going on. So I, you know, I'm kind of on the fence on that one. I think if I had a kid or myself in a wheelchair, I would discourage them from going down there just for safety purposes.
Well, yeah, and I understand that, but still, at the same time, when the breakdown was broken down, and now they're going to have to do summary reports every 90 days for the next several years to bring the Justice Department up to speed. But it wasn't just pit row, and I understand that there's a lot of activity down there. I spent a lot of time in pit row. There is a lot of activity down there, but from the aspect of a fan who really would love to experience that, I think that they should at least have the opportunity to do that. Even if it's a special day. Hey, this day is dedicated to this type of a situation. But going further than that is the stands itself. It's very difficult for fans in wheelchairs to actually get to the stands, into the stands, and watch the race like the rest of us take for granted. Well, you know, guys, I hate to do this, but it's going to bring us to the end of our segment, if you will. But I do know that both of you guys are out there on Twitter, and Radio Speed Talk will be heard tomorrow. Now, typically, it's right after the Colts game. What I can tell you is that tomorrow – it'll be on in the afternoon. We are still trying to figure it out. But it'll absolutely be on in the afternoon, guys. So, real quickly, Super Bowl picks, and where can people find you on Twitter, Facebook, all of that stuff? We'll start with you, Kenny.
Super Bowl picks? Why did you jump subjects on me again?
we are gonna get over to that.
No, I was actually paying attention this time, and there you go. I've got it. You can do a pick. I'm
going to
pick Denver.
Hey, that's a good pick. All right, where can people find you on Twitter, Facebook, Adult Friend Finders, anything?
I'm on Adult Friend Finders. I already got my adult friend, and she's not too far away from me picking that. Yeah. And KennyBar52 on Twitter. I pirate my wife's Facebook, so I'm not allowed to let you know where I'm sneaking around in there. I'm only on there just to kind of keep an eye on my kids.
America's leading cause of divorce, The Balance. Come be a guest if you want divorce. Kitty, I mean Cliff.
Yeah, speakerphone. Now I got to go make Gracie nice, man. Thanks a lot.
Cliff, you're good to go. You're single because you're holding out for Danica. We know that. So lawsuit training orders right behind there. But where can people find you on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff?
Well, again, it's Radio Speed Talk 2. It's the number 2, not the word 2. You can go to facebook.com/Radio Speed Talk and obviously radiospeedtalk.com. And I say it's going to be Green Bay and Denver with Denver winning the Super Bowl.
Green Bay again. Well, there you go, guys. We're going to definitely get into that conversation later on. We got to take a break. And we get back, it's College Saturday. We're going to break down college hoops. Obviously, IU got a big game against Minnesota. The Big Ten finally returns to Assembly Hall. An exciting time for Indiana University. We're going to talk about that with Kenny Barr. And I'm thinking maybe Jimmy the intern has decided to join us. I'm not exactly sure about that. But we'll be right back right around the corner for College Saturday.
I got
bacon. Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, ProIndy, and on Facebook, IndyProSports.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
On climbing, suck it. Thought I couldn't swing this. Now rock the crowd and get a pump. It's go Ice. Everybody is saying to the
phone. All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis. El Presidente in Saturday morning. It's time for College Saturday. And you know what? Not a better intro to College Saturday than Vanilla Ice. Play that funky music. Well, joining us now, I do believe, is Jimmy the Intern. Jimmy, are you with us?
Tom, I am here. I didn't know that Vanilla Ice was so perfect of an intro for college basketball, but now I do. I'm glad I do.
It is. Absolutely, it is. And you know what? You never know what's going to happen here on The Balance. And I tell you why you never know, because I never know if you're going to be on or not going to be on. I was going by your text. You had a romantic breakfast going on and stuff, and so.
Well, Tom, the thing is, I still do, but I decided that I need to be here for The Balance. I'm excited for College Basketball Saturday. It was with great regret that I forwarded you that text last night, and this morning I decided, you know what? It's time to go against the odds. It's time to really ramp this thing up and make both happen, because I'm a go-getter, and dang it, Tom, I'm here today.
Hey, man, we're so glad that you are here with us. And also, Mr. Kenny Barr, who I called off the bench here and said, hey, man, I need your help. And he said, I'll be glad to do that. I'll wake up Preston. Well, and he couldn't do it, so I think he felt bad. So Kenny Barr's joining us as well. Kenny, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. What's new with you? Anything?
Hey, I tell you what, not much since the last 30 minutes, but we're gonna move forward, guys. And we're going to start with you, Jimmy. Big game at Assembly Hall today. Indiana versus Minnesota. Big Ten back at Assembly Hall. Never before has the Big Ten meant so much to Indiana University, at least not in a long time when it comes to basketball. We are making strides, and as they say, we're kicking tail and taking names. So Indiana University versus Minnesota today in just a few short hours, sir.
Yes, I'm actually going to be at that game starting at 11. I'm on a pretty tight schedule today, I'll tell you that much. But this game has some real significance. IU playing a top-10 opponent for the first time in Assembly Hall as a top-10 team since 2000. They lost that game to OSU. Hopefully this one comes out a little better. Minnesota visited Assembly Hall last year about this time, and they gave the Hoosiers their first and only loss at home last season. IU is going to be looking to change that tide here today, and Minnesota is not going to let them do it easily. They're a very good team. IU is a very good team. It's going to be a very fun game.
All right, Kenny, now let me ask you this real quickly here. I know that your son goes to University of Kansas, and your guys are Jayhawks supporters, but you live here in Indiana.
Yeah. He's a Jayhawk supporter. I'm a Jayhawk harasser, trust me.
Hey, whether or not you realize it or not, you're a Jayhawk supporter too, sir.
Hey, brother, he's going on. He's doing this on his nickel, man, not mine. I don't feel guilty.
I totally understand. All right, well, Kenny, go ahead and talk with us about your thoughts. IU, Minnesota, today, Assembly Hall.
I watched the first 5 or 6 minutes of the last IU game against Penn State, and if they played as sloppy a basketball that I saw play in that second half of the Penn State game, they're in trouble. I mean, the first, I think it was 8 times down the floor. Now, this went both ways. Penn State was stinking to join up, too. But I saw 6 out of 8 unforced errors. And, you know, the first 5 minutes of any half is very, very important. I learned that in the old Bob Knight days, and it just holds true even today. Whether you're talking about high school, college, or college, you got to set the tone. You got to get in there and get the feel for the game again, and get in your rhythm and get in your timing and stuff. And Minnesota is not a slouch. I mean, I think that some people got them rated as high as 7th. I think the ESPN's got them as high as 2nd in the BPI ratings and stuff. So Indiana better have their A-plus game on and tell Jimmy to cheer loud and be that good sixth man and raise a little bit of raise a little bit of noise in that building and help them along, because I really like to see IU just thump Minnesota, but I don't think they're going to – they've got their hands full.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the official rating for Minnesota is number 8, obviously coming into Assembly Hall at 15-1. Now, here's the thing. You're right about one thing. Penn State did out-rebound IU, Jimmy. And, Jimmy, when you look at that, the only other team that won the rebound battle was Butler. And so, fortunately, that the same outcome was not the same. But Minnesota is definitely a tough team, and it is the heavyweight battle there at Assembly Hall. So what does Indiana University have to do to maintain control against the Golden Gophers?
Well, Kenny's definitely right. They need to do a better job rebounding than they have. They need to do a better job playing clean basketball. And I don't mean not dirty, not fouling, not being aggressive. I mean not turning the ball over. And he's exactly right. The second half of that Penn State game was about as ugly as the championship game between Notre Dame and Alabama that was going on at about the same time. That being said, I really like what IU was able to do in the first half of that game. Tom Crean was displeased with their effort in the second. I think they've worked to clean that up, and they're going to be ramped up for the first Big Ten game at Assembly Hall. I think we'll see something closer to the IU team we saw in the first half than the second half, and they're going to need it against Minnesota.
Well, obviously, Minnesota hasn't lost since that 89-71 defeat to Duke in the title game of November's battle for Atlantis tourney in the Bahamas. So, you know, and you also look at it like this. Minnesota is the only team to win in Assembly Hall in the last 2 years, winning 77-74 last January. So Minnesota has IU's number. IU has got to come in there and play some basketball. They're rated number 5. They started out the season number 1. We're real excited about that. And if they begin to lose games, especially on the road as they go on the road again, which there is no home, I would say that in the Big Ten that any home court has home field advantage is hard to play on the road. So it's going to be difficult for IU to win on the road no matter who they play. But they have to win big in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, that question, Tom, and if you just jumping in here really quick, the idea that Minnesota has IU's number I think might be a little strong because IU did go up there to the barn last year as well and beat them. As a matter of fact, Tom Crean said yesterday during media availability that he showed his team the game from last year. They've been watching Friday the game all day, basically yesterday before practice. They watched that, and they watched a lot of individual situations and how they came out and played that game. How can the hell they can avoid playing that kind of game here today? I don't think that's going to be an issue as much, and I'm really looking forward to the game because, as we've said multiple times, Minnesota's a great team. They've played really well. They've exceeded expectations, and they're really deep. And for my money, they're one of the four best teams in the Big Ten. They're one of those big contenders for the championship.
Well, absolutely. A lot of people like Minnesota in this game. I think that IU can definitely pull it off and continue to win in the Big Ten. But they just have to have a great showing in the Big Ten. Kenny, any final thoughts here on IU in Minnesota game?
Protect your house at home and win at least half your games on the road. It's going to take probably a four-loss season to win the Big Ten, and boy, you don't want to give anything up at home. So it's going to be a great game. Dial it up, watch it. Everybody's a coach in basketball here in the state of Indiana, and not a big basketball aficionado, it's going to be a fun game to watch.
Well, absolutely. And I hope we still got Jimmy. Jimmy, are you with us, sir?
I'm here.
Man, and what are you doing, brother? I just got to ask. I mean, what is going on?
I'll tell you what, hold on, let me see something really quick. There we go. All right, does this sound any better?
Yeah, you sound like you're calling me from this space station, the Earth out in outer space. That's all good.
I'm on team iPhone now, Tom, and I'm still working out the kinks there. I'm trying to decide between speakerphone, between the headset, between whatever you want to try to do with the mic on the phone. There's a lot of different things going on here, and if it's affecting the show, I'll dial it back.
No, you're fine. It's just you can call us back when right after this comment here, you can go ahead and hang up and call us back. But I know Purdue had an awesome opportunity against Ohio State. And you look at Ohio State's point guard, Aaron Kraft, and he was in foul trouble. Purdue did not capitalize against Ohio State, despite a lot of things working in their favor. The Boilermakers only shot 38% on Tuesday night. And the 15th-ranked Ohio State built an early double-digit lead. If you're going to beat Ohio State, you have to win the whole game. And Purdue missed that opportunity, especially with Aaron Kraft not playing his best game.
Yeah, especially with as young of a team as they are. I mean, Purdue does not have a lot of experience with this unit doing heavy lifting to win Big Ten conference games, and that showed against Ohio State. They had a shot to win. They played harder, and they played better than they had for most of the season, but it still didn't end up being enough because they didn't play the full 40 minutes. They're going to learn to do that, I would think. But until they do, it's going to be a rough season, in part for the Boilermakers. There are going to be some ups and downs. They have some talent going forward. I think they're going to be all right. But, you know, still, that means that Purdue's one of the four worst teams in the Big Ten this year just because of how deep the league is.
Well, absolutely. Well, I'm going to let Jimmy hang up and call back here, but we're going to go over here to Kenny. Kenny, what are your thoughts on this Purdue-Ohio State game? And Purdue really has to put things together to get some wins in the Big Ten.
Purdue is young enough where that hard to teach intangible about closing out games, winning, and playing hard for 40 minutes is just something you have to learn. It's rare when you get young teams that get it right out of the get-go, especially when you've just changed the chemistry of the team like Purdue did, losing a lot of good, solid ball players over time. And, you know, they say the older players teach the younger players and that kind of thing. But you got to get in there and experience it and figure it out for yourself before you can really apply it and stuff. I mean, you can stand on the sidelines and coach and preach and yell and scream and holler. And it's just it's a bizarre little intangible that kids either have it or they don't have it or they got to learn it. And when you get four or five kids that have to learn it, you're going to have trouble closing out and winning those close, tough games, especially against teams like Ohio State who are not a bad ball club. They don't play defense worth a hoo-dee-doo, but still, they're pretty athletic. You know, the Purdue's defensive game plan should have been a little bit different. I think if they'd have just blanketed Thomas, especially early in the game when he was he got a majority of points in the first half, it was 14 or 16 or whatever he got there. I think they could have got him. Maybe they don't have somebody athletic enough to guard Thomas. I don't know, but they certainly had an opportunity. And they'll learn. They'll get it figured out. Like Jimmy just said, I mean, the Big Ten is spooky deep this year. I mean, it's just this lot of good basketball. I haven't seen the power rankings for conferences, but I would be absolutely stunned if the Big Ten isn't the toughest conference in the country by far, just because of how deep they are.
Well, absolutely. And I do think we got Jimmy back. Jimmy, are you back with us?
I am. Does this sound any better?
Oh, man. You sound marvelous, brother. I tell you what, I never realized how much I loved your voice till I couldn't hear you, sir.
Well, that's what a lot of people have said, and I keep getting that on a regular basis. I guess it must be true.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Big Ten and then we'll switch divisions here and kind of look at college basketball as a whole. Today, Iowa has an uphill battle. Obviously, Iowa is off to a rough start in the Big Ten with an 0-3 start, which is not good. And, of course, against very, very good teams, obviously, Indiana, Michigan, Michigan State. The latest setback was a 62-59 defeat at home to the Spartans that the Hawkeyes, really, I thought had a chance to win. So now what? What happens with Iowa, and what does Iowa have to do to get on top of this slump that they're in? And it's really, really rare to see Iowa Hawkeyes in basketball be struggling this much in the Big Ten.
Well, over the past couple of years, it hasn't been as much of a struggle, or it hasn't been as much of a surprise for them to struggle, because they've really had a hard time winning conference games. This year, they started with IU, Michigan, and Michigan State in three consecutive games. That's a murderer's row of a schedule, if you're trying to start conference play. I think Iowa's going to bounce back all right. They, to me, are the bubble team in the Big Ten. Northwestern, at this point, has played their way out of it a little bit. There's plenty of time to get back in. But Iowa, I am not surprised by any of the games they've lost. They've acquitted themselves well, and they nearly beat Michigan State the other day. I think they have time to get back into this thing. It's just a question of how many of those games against lower-tier opponents can they pull out? Can they win the games they're supposed to win? And then a couple that maybe they shouldn't. If they do that, if they come to a 500 record in the Big Ten, I think you're going to see them safely in the NCAA tournament field.
Well, and I hope that you're right. But right now I'm not entirely convinced that that Iowa can get their act together, in time for that to happen. I hope that you're right. I hope that they can pull some wins together. But I just still wonder if they're going to make the tournament, which is going to be huge, huge news for Iowa if they don't make the tournament. Kenny, what are your thoughts there on Iowa and their struggle, or any thoughts on Iowa this year as we move into the Big Ten conference play in hoops?
Iowa's going to be fine. Jimmy's right. That's just a downright nasty, ugly schedule to come out of the gate with. I'm sure that when they took a look at their schedule at the beginning of the year, they went, "Oh, my God, who did this?" and get on the phone with Jim Delaney and start yelling at him about it. But they had Michigan State on the ropes for quite a while, beating Michigan State at their own game, crashing the boards, running the floor, and playing an athletic type of game rather than a ball-control half-court offense and stuff. Michigan State just finally woke up. You know, they went in there, one of those deals where somebody, I think they wanted to mail it in and just go home, and Iowa wasn't going to let them. Plus, Iowa just got a beaten down by Indiana and Michigan, so they know what it's going to take to win in the Big Ten this year. Iowa's going to be fine. They'll be a mid-pack team where it's all over with, and they're going to surprise a few people. It's just an ugly, ugly start on the year. And they got the big bodies and good enough personnel where they get the job done. They're going to play a little bit different than some people do, especially if they run up against some more athletic teams. But I think Iowa's going to be just fine.
Well, you know, again, you and Jimmy are a lot more optimistic about Iowa Hawkeyes this year than I am. So hopefully you guys are right and we'll watch it. But one of the other good games that I want to look at today is obviously in the Big Ten, Illinois and Wisconsin. It's been more than a year since Illinois won a Big Ten game on the road. And a visit to Wisconsin, Jimmy, is probably not going to change that. Obviously, the number 12 Fighting Illini look to avoid a ninth consecutive conference road loss and snap a three-game skid against the surging Badgers today. I don't see Illinois beating Wisconsin at home today. Jimmy?
Well, with Illinois, you never know what you're going to get. You have no idea until you start seeing Brandon Paul shoot threes and DJ Richardson shoot threes, because they have legitimately three guys who are really dangerous and two guys who are streaky. And if three of those five guys are hitting their shots, Illinois isn't going to be beat. They killed Butler doing just that. They beat Gonzaga doing that, and they've lost some games they should have won because their shooters couldn't get going. Now, Wisconsin has always been a strong defensive team under Bo Ryan. You would imagine they'd run the Illini shooters off the perimeter, and you'd think that they could get some stuff going against them on offense, but you never know with Illinois. Illinois is going to be the wild card this year in the Big Ten. They could beat just about anybody, and they can lose to just about anybody. It all depends on how their shooting is.
Well, and I absolutely agree with that. And you do never know. It is a big bag of magic tricks with Illinois. But one thing I do know that Wisconsin has in their bag of magic tricks, they have a guy like Ryan Evans, the Big Ten leader with eight rebounds per game, and has averaged over 13.8 points and 10.0 boards in the last five contests. I'll tell you what, Ryan Evans is a hard man to stop, defend, and come against.
And he's got a pretty nice flat top, too. Nothing against Ryan Evans on any front. But I'll tell you, the other thing, too, you're keeping an eye on Ryan Evans as a rebounder. You also have to watch Jared Berggren in the front court. He's their big-time rebounder. He's someone that IU fans will become familiar with when the Hoosiers take on the Badgers a little later this season. He's going to be a good matchup for Cody Zeller. But you're exactly right. These are two teams that run counter to each other as far as that goes, because Wisconsin has the presence inside to take care of Illinois, and Illinois, if they can get hot from the perimeter, can nullify that with a bunch of three-point shooting. This is the beauty of Big Ten basketball. It's unpredictable.
Well, and absolutely. I wish we had more time in our segment to really dive into the Big Ten, but we've just got a few more minutes, and I wanted to save this conversation for Preston. I thought was going to join us to fill in for you, but Kenny's with us anyway, so we'll go ahead and we'll talk about this big game, one of my favorite teams to watch, and I started watching Texas Tech several years ago when one guy by the name of Bobby Knight left Bloomington and went to Texas Tech. I became a fan of Texas Tech then. Obviously, still not, I mean, not the coach there, neither Knights are, but I began to like Texas Tech, and I began to follow a lot of the Texas Tech teams. And I like them. I'm a fan of Texas Tech, but they play Kansas today, and I wanted to talk some Jayhawk basketball with Preston. But, Kitty, you're going to have to fill in for us. Kansas is a good matchup against Texas Tech, and you know, obviously proving the 2-0 in the conference, and certainly have a great opportunity against Texas Tech. What are your thoughts? Kansas has won five straight games in the last season's 81-46 road victory was the Red Raiders' worst home loss ever. So what are your thoughts?
Where are they playing?
Texas Tech. Did you not listen to anything I just rambled about?
Where they were playing. I got every bit of it. I just wasn't sure what venue they were at.
I'm sorry. My bad. they are playing.
Kansas will have to be on their game because Kansas did not play particularly well at home against who was it that they stole a game out from underneath the other day that ran out of gas on them? Oh, God, I sat here and watched the whole thing, too, and McLemore hit that last-second bank shot three from just the left side of the top of the key, or they wouldn't even have gone into overtime. But Kansas was a little lazy defensively. It let the interior play didn't dominate as much, but they drew Withy out of the paint a lot and had him trying to block these mid-range shots. And Withy is still the leading shot blocker in the country. Young had to go inside and do some more dirty work, more than he normally does, and the other four they got in there had to get in there and do some work. But Kansas just outlasted their opponent. Man, I figured if I could ramble long enough, I could remember who it was.
I'm not sure. I didn't see the game, so I don't know. Unfortunately, we don't get a lot of those games on television here, so I did miss that. Jimmy, what are your thoughts? Kansas, Texas Tech, can you help Kenny remember who he's referring to there against Kansas?
Well, I can't remember who Kansas played, so unfortunately the audience is going to have to continue to live in suspense. But I do know that Texas Tech is in for something interesting today in terms of Kansas being a much superior team. When you talk about being a Texas Tech fan, I assure you there are a lot of longtime Texas Tech fans who reach out and empathize with you and feel sorry for you that you've hitched yourself to this wagon, because Texas Tech basketball without Bob Knight has been really traditionally miserable. They have not been a good team for much of their existence, and it doesn't look like that's going to change this year. They had brought in Billy Gillespie to try and switch that around. That didn't take. You all know that story where he was fired for mistreating his players, allegedly. And really, we're just going to be keeping an eye on Kansas today for how well they're going to be able to play. Texas Tech, they managed to win this game. The story is going to be Kansas choking rather than the Raiders doing something positive.
Hey, Tom, it was Iowa State, by the way.
Iowa State. Oh, okay, the other Iowa team that's doing better than the Hawkeyes. Well, guys, we got time for one more game breakdown, and I certainly want to include our regional teams the most we can. Obviously, number 14 Butler is going against Dayton, and Butler is a good team to watch. Big fan of the Bulldogs, big fan of Brad Stevens and what he's been able to do with the Butler Bulldogs, especially in the last few years. I think this is a relatively easy win, Jimmy, against the Dayton Flyers, but they are 10-5, but they're 0-1 in the conference. So what are your thoughts?
I've got a friend, actually, who goes to Dayton who will not be attending the game, unfortunately. Dayton students are still out for Christmas break. Imagine that. They get an extra week, which is pretty nice for them, I guess. Dayton's not a bad basketball team, and I wouldn't say it's an easy win if not for Butler being as good as they've been. It's going to be a bellwether game, no question about that. because there are a lot of people wondering how good Butler is. They've really improved from last year. A lot of folks think this Butler team, around the program that is, this Butler team is about even with the squad that went to the championship game with Gordon Hayward and Shelvin Mack. And they think they have that much talent. They love this squad, and it'll be worth keeping an eye on as the season progresses. They're 14 in the country right now. They've got some tough games on their schedule coming down the pipe, and if they can manage to best those, they're going to have a really good shot at a high seed in March. It's going to start against Dayton. They've got to get the job done against the teams they're supposed to beat.
Well, we're going to give the final word to you, Kenny. What are your thoughts? Butler, Dayton, what are your thoughts on that? And we've got to wrap out of this segment and get to NFL talk because it's playoff weekend. Kenny?
Butler's going to pound Dayton. That's going to be an ugly game. I wouldn't even watch it, you know. But I think it's going to be a 20-point bloodletting. Butler's just too well coached. They've been playing pretty well. They do have some tough teams up on the schedule coming up, but Dayton isn't one of them. I think Butler's just going to pound them.
Well, guys, that's going to have to wrap it up for us as we get ready for our next segment. Minions, stay put. 917-889-8516 is the digits. If you want to get into some of this playoff talk, Jimmy the intern, where can people find your work and your masterpieces at, sir?
Well, Tom, they can follow me on Twitter at JPCIV. Just the letters at JPCIV. I'll be at the IU game on Press Row today at noon sharp, so be sure to follow along there. Check my written work on iusportcom.com.
Sounds good. Jimmy the intern, we'll see you next Saturday. Kenny Barr, thanks for filling in for us. Thanks for coming off the bench there and helping us out, sir. Where can people find your work and your masterpieces, sir?
Don't know if I got any masterpieces, but I got a little work on Twitter, Kenny Barr 52. And Jimmy, wear a rainbow fright wig so I can watch and figure out who you are in the crowd today.
He's already disconnected, but we'll do that. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this segment, College Saturday. We'll be back right here, right around the corner. Jeff Kurtz is going to be joining us from Bear Claws, going to be talking about the NFL playoffs. Playoffs? That's right, we can talk about playoffs. And Gene Walker's going to call in as well and talk with us a little bit about the NFL playoffs for the next hour. Guys, we are going to be talking nothing but the NFL and the playoffs. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Here we go. New 20! New 20!
Football. Catch the fever.
The Florida King.
And now let's talk some football.
Gentlemen.
Tom Trebo?
That's right.
like Tom Trebo.
Helmsman, trophy winner, and starting quarterback from the national champion Crocodiles of the University of the Peninsula State just below the state of Georgia.
Hey, Rusty. You know, someone has to fill my shoes next year with the Crocodiles of the University of the Peninsula State just below Georgia. Are you that someone?
Who, me? That sounds good. Y'all got a slut done?
Ah, you so damn handsome. Wait, wait, I can't be feeling this.
It's time for...
The Little Bits Go Green!
Well, Elizabeth, we are back. Bowl season is over. Do you want to know how you did in the college football bowls?
Yeah.
You ended up with a record of 26-10.
Whoa.
Not bad.
Did I break the record?
Well, you did better a couple years ago. Okay. But the worst thing is, you know who lost, giving you one of those 10 losses.
Not a day more.
I know. You're heartbroken, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm not heartbroken.
Because they'll come back next year, won't they?
Yeah.
You know it. So, okay. Well, last week in the NFL playoffs, because they started, you actually went 2-2. Your only winning teams were the Texans and the Redskins. Ready to head on to this week, second week of NFL playoffs? Okay, let's start with Saturday, 4:30. In the AFC, do you go with the Baltimore Ravens or the Denver Broncos?
Baltimore Ravens.
Wow, you're going with the Ravens. Moving on to the NFC, 8 o'clock game. Do you go with the Green Bay Packers or the San Francisco 49ers?
San Francisco 49ers.
San Francisco 49ers. Okay, moving on to Sunday. Back in the NFC, we are going at 1 o'clock. The Seattle Seahawks or the Atlanta Falcons? The Atlanta Falcons. And finally, in the AFC, do you go with the Houston Texans or the New England Patriots?
The England Patriots.
You're breaking Bye-bye. My heart, kid. Okay. So to recap, for the Saturday games, you go with the Baltimore Ravens, San Francisco 49ers. On Sunday, you're going with the Atlanta Falcons and the New England Patriots. Who picked those?
A little bit to get it. But I'm going to like me on Facebook, facebook.com/LizBitsTheGeek. Amen.
Good job.
My minions, welcome back to hour number two, the most anticipated hour of the show today. We're going to jump right in to the NFL playoffs. That's right, it's playoffs. Playoffs? Don't talk to me about playoffs. Well, we could definitely talk with you about playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Well, absolutely, the playoffs are here, and we know that they started a little bit last week, and unfortunately, the Indianapolis Colts did not make it, but I consider the wild card as kind of like a preview. It's good that those guys get to move on to teams like the Ravens and other wild card teams, but the real playoffs start this weekend. Round one, Denver Broncos, Baltimore Ravens, Peyton Manning. Could we see another matchup of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady in the playoffs to go to the Super Bowl in an AFC championship? The tension builds. To help us break it down is Mr. Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. Knows everything there is to know about the Chicago Bears. And obviously, we want to pick his brain about the coaching decision going on there, as well as the playoff situation. And also joining us from Indiana Talks, Mr. Gene Talks. Mr. Gene Walker, who certainly has been talking about sports for a long time, two experts in the NFL, and are so glad to join both of them with us today. Jeff, how are we doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, sir. Did you have a good New Year's Eve and all that good stuff?
I did. It was pretty quiet, but that's how I like it anymore. It keeps me out of trouble.
Absolutely. And also joining us for the second week in a row, and I don't know why he would brave to come back on again, is Mr. Gene Walker of Indiana Talks. Obviously been around the sports world for quite a long time. Gene, how you doing, sir?
Good morning, and echo the sentiments of our friend in Chicago.
All right, well, guys, let's break this down. We want to start. Obviously, one of the reasons we Jeff on, one of many, but we bring Jeff on to talk about the Bears. And obviously, the Bears release Lovie Smith. They're in the search for a coach. How's that going out there? And talk with us a little bit. I'm really kind of lost on why they dismissed Lovie Smith. And you look at rumors that fly around and say, well, Jay Cutler had a lot of influence. If that's the case, that I'm really disappointed in the front office of the Chicago Bears. Jeff?
Well, I think it was for two primary reasons, Tom. And Lovie Smith is a outstanding man and a decent coach. He was there in Chicago for 9 years, took him to a Super Bowl, two NFC Championship games, three NFC North Division titles. But the fact of the matter is that the Bears missed the playoffs 5 out of the last 6 years, and their offense never ranked higher than 15th. And you just can't have that anymore. It's the NFL is what have you done for me lately? And even though this year's team was 10-6, they missed out on the playoffs. They really stumbled badly down the stretch after starting 7-1. So if you look at it, it's the fact that they didn't go to the playoffs 5 out of the last 6 years, and the fact that the offense, for a variety of reasons, mostly attributed to their lack of ability or lack of being able to fix the offensive line that's been a problem forever. And then that led to some inconsistency from the quarterback play. But those are the two primary reasons. I think it'll be interesting to see if Smith lands on his feet. I think definitely he'll have a chance to be a head coach again. I'm not sure if he'll get one of the jobs open this year. He may have to prove himself as a defensive coordinator before he lands that. But it was just time for a change. And I think in any business, after a while, the message gets stale, and you need to look to bring in new leadership, and that's what happened in Chicago.
Well, what I want to do is maybe you can squash a rumor for us. Is Mark Trestman the new coach for the Chicago Bears?
He's not. That's a premature report that Jimmy Johnson put on his Twitter account yesterday and really had no basis in fact. He's one of 13 candidates that is interviewed. But they've cast a very wide net. They're looking for 13 or have interviewed 13 people as of Sunday. Phil Emery, the Bears general manager, is actually in Houston for Rick Dennison, the Texans offensive coordinator today. He'll be interviewing Seattle offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel. And tomorrow he will wind up the weekend in Indianapolis with Bruce Arians, the Indianapolis Colts interim coach and offensive coordinator. So busy weekend. They've cast a wide net. It'll be interesting to see what they do there. It'll be an offensive mind, most likely somebody with that background to jumpstart that side of the ball for the Bears. And I expect that we'll have some news sometime next week, at least on a couple finalists. They'll meet with ownership, and then Emery will make the decision.
Now, Gene, I want to go over to you. I know you study the NFL quite proficiently, and you certainly understand the ins and outs of what a lot of these teams are looking for when it comes to coach placements. And we look at really at the huge, huge placement. I don't know in recent memory when we've had so many coaches and GMs fired on a single day as we did on Black Man Monday. So your thoughts, Gene, and any other coaching scenario you want to throw out there too. But what are your thoughts on the Chicago Bears releasing Lovie Smith and the search for the new coach? And your thoughts, Gene, who should it be?
Well, going back to Lovie, I was a little surprised as well that they got rid of Lovie because he still had time on his contract. And if you spend any time looking at the McCaskies, you know one thing. They're not going to be giving money away. I thought if for no other reason at 10-6, this guy was going to be there for another year and they were going to move on from there. So it was a little shock. It was a little surprising to me that they parted ways with him. You can get anybody you want to come coach Chicago Bears. And you guys in the air squad can tell you this without question. It's not going to matter who coaches Chicago Bears. If they don't make an attempt at getting an offensive line, I really feel like that's probably where the big problem lies is in the front five. and they we've heard this before. I like Bruce Arians as a coach there, but no matter who you get, they're not going to install some kind of wing-ding offense that Paul Williams runs down in Georgia Tech. This isn't going to be an Andy Reid experiment. They're going to have to get a boss offensive line to get in there for Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler wouldn't take off and run if you put a gun to his head. If the seas were parting and he had 50 yards ahead of him one time, he would only maybe attempt that once or twice every five games. So you've got to give the guy time to pass. Now, if you do that, we know the Bears can win football games, and Cutler's one of the best in the league when he has time. So I think they're going to go for Arians, I would imagine. But the problem is, again, we look at North Turner, we look at a lot of these guys. There's head coaches and there's coordinators, and seldom do the two be the same thing. It's different to lead a team than it is to just be very good from the box. So if you just want to go for an offensive coordinator, you better make sure that this guy has led men before. And a lot of people look that over when it comes time to make a decision on who's going to be their head coach. A great offensive line, Mike Martz, but he wasn't a big-time head coach. So it's two different personalities right there. And what I fear for the Bears is if they just go strictly for the mind, again, and don't deal that offensive line, his personality, they might be looking at a gypsy bankroll there.
Well, let's talk about Bruce Arians, and I want to get your thoughts on that as well. Gene, obviously Bruce Arians is earned the right to a phone call from a team, but is he ready to coach an NFL team? And you look at a lot of are you with us, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. When you look at a lot of different teams out there, I don't know. I guess maybe it's my there's two parts. So I obviously want to keep him here at the Colts, and the other part of that is we get caught up with what one coach was able to do with one season. Does the Bears really want to hire a team a head coach that really? Maybe, and we don't want to say it, but maybe it was a fluke. And what happens if I think what you should look at is an opportunity to give these coaches the ability to prove themselves maybe a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe it's my desire to keep him here in Indianapolis, Jeff. But is Bruce Arians really the best choice for the Bears?
I think he's going to be one of two or three finalists, along with Denver Broncos offensive coordinator Mike McCoy. I think that Mark Trestman, who we spoke about earlier, will be one of the finalists. And I wouldn't discount Tampa Bay offensive coordinator Mike Sullivan, who was the former receivers coach for the New York Giants and had a lot to do with the development of Eli Manning. So as far as Arians, he probably has the most proven resume if you just look where guys have been. He was a college coach at Temple. He did an outstanding job this season in an interim role with the Colts. He's had the experience at Pittsburgh where he was the longtime offensive coordinator. Ben Roethlisberger raves about his ability to work with quarterbacks. So I think that the two things that are working against him, and let's just put him out there, is his age. He's 60. And the fact that through no fault of his own, the episode last week where he got sick and was hospitalized a couple different times. The NFL is a 24/7, 365-day job. They're looking for someone, and coaches, and I think we can have a whole show about this. They don't get a lot of time anymore. Mike Mularkey, one season in Jacksonville, and gets gassed after a 2-14 record. Ownership comes in there, changes things around, new general manager comes in. So guys don't get a lot of time. They're looking for people who can command a room, to use a phrase that you hear in NFL circles a lot, and really exhibit the leadership. The coach is almost, he's the face of the franchise, he's the CEO, he's the voice piece of the organization. So teams are concerned about all those kinds of things, and he has to be able to delegate and put a good staff together. The rush for all these teams is, not only do they want to get their head coach in place, but there's a rush for assistant coaches. And sometimes that's a little bit of a rush, but to give you a good example, Oakland last year hired Dennis Allen, who was a former Broncos defensive coordinator, and that was after the Super Bowl in February. He put together a staff last moment. A lot of guys had already been snapped up by other organizations. And then after this season, he launched about half of that staff that he hired. Maybe it wasn't the right fit. Maybe it wasn't the guys that he really wanted, but they were the only people out there at that time available. So a lot of things go into a selection of a head coach and what kind of staff he can put together. I think, long story and answer short, I think Arians is a serious candidate. I think he'll interview well for the job. I think he'll also have his pick. I wouldn't be surprised if San Diego goes after him very strongly as well, where the Colts' former vice president of player personnel was just named the general manager with San Diego. So I think he'll have a couple opportunities, and it just is dependent upon how well the interviews go and what the teams really want in their head coach.
Well, and I think that's a very good point. I think the better fit for Bruce Arians is San Diego, because he does have that relationship with Tom Telesco, who just recently was named the GM. Obviously, that's a great fit there. I think Arians will do much better in San Diego than he will Chicago. And not to mention, the media will beat up Arians. And you know, again, going to what you were saying there, Jeff, any team with Bruce Arians, again, no fault of his own, should also demand a complete medical physical as well. Now, Gene, I want to ask you a question. How much influence does players like Jay Cutler, and you look at Rivers out there in San Diego, and you look at Michael Vick at Philadelphia Eagles, and you look at Jay Cutler with the Bears, and you look at just various different players. How much influence do those players actually have on the hiring of the coach? And does the GM and front office personnel actually sit down with a conversation about them when they develop the short list and get their thoughts on that up-and-coming coach?
Big-time quarterbacks generally seem to get the ear of people quicker. Or if you've predicated your team around defense and running the ball, and you have like the defensive captain who has been a stalwart for your team, they seem to be in the air a little bit, but it doesn't nearly influence the way it does in the NBA. In the NBA, we've clearly seen how one superstar can literally change the MO of a team going after a coach, or even firing of a coach, if one or two stars on a roster of 10 to 15 guys speaks up for or against a guy more in the NBA or in the NFL, where you're talking 45 to 50 guys plus practice squad and all that. So, you know, if Peyton Manning was sitting there talking to you, I would imagine that would probably carry some weight. But if not, I don't think it carries as much weight as it would, like, say, in the National Basketball Association.
Well, real quickly here, guys, I want to go through some teams that are still looking for a coach. And I just want you, if you were to right now, and we don't really have to analyze it or break it down, but just your thoughts and say, hey, this is the guy I want to hire, your top guy. Then we're going to take a break and we're going to get into the playoff games of the weekend. But I'm going to name these teams, and I just want you guys to just tell me real quickly who you think it would be. So, Jeff, we'll start with the San Diego Chargers. Who should be the coach of the San Diego Chargers?
I think that Bruce Arians will wind up getting that job.
Philadelphia Eagles.
I think that they will go for a offensive coordinator. I'm going to throw out the name Mike Sullivan, who I mentioned previously, Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator currently.
And Jacksonville Jaguars.
I think that they're going to go for a under-the-radar candidate that's not a terribly attractive situation with the quarterback and a small market. So I think that they might lean towards a special teams coach. And I'll give you three names to keep in mind. Minnesota Vikings special teams coach Mike Pryfer, Atlanta Falcons special teams coach Keith Armstrong, and the Bears special teams coordinator, who's held in high regard, Dave Tobe.
Well, that brings me to who I would have picked for the Chicago Bears. But Chicago Bears, who do you think will they'll pick?
I think their eye is on Mike McCoy. The problem, I think that Denver will be playing for a while, and I don't know if they can remain that patient or their fan base can remain that patient until he's finished in the playoffs. But that he would be my top choice.
All right, and finally, the Arizona Cardinals.
Arizona, I'm going to say that Lovie Smith has an excellent shot at that job just because of his track record, and the ownership situation out there is a little muddied. They just promoted, they got rid of not only their coach, but their general manager just promoted their vice president of player personnel to that position. So I think Lovie Smith has possibly the inside track on that job if he wants it.
Well, I you know, great, I wish Lovie Smith the best, but there are fans and there are those that would say that Arizona Cardinals are where careers go to die and retire. So maybe that's not the case with Lovie Smith. All right, we're going to move over to you, Gene, San Diego Chargers. Who's the next coach?
I kind of like Ken Wisenhunt for that job. I mean, if you look back at just real quickly what he did for the very brief years he had quarterbacks that had their game together, the Cardinals were very successful. He was also played with guys like Anderson and Cobb getting hurt and the replacements there. But when they had decent quarterback play, the Cardinals were just fine.
All right, and next on the list is the Philadelphia Eagles.
So I don't know how much of a fit it is. I wouldn't be surprised to see Lovie Smith or McCoy, those two guys, be there in Philadelphia.
Jacksonville Jaguars.
I don't know if you know, maybe that's where Arians ends up. Maybe a show like that. The Jacksonville Jaguars are so far behind the eight ball right now, and I personally think, no matter what anybody says, the statements made by their general manager the other day were bizarre. That you're not even going to consider Tim Tebow. I don't know how you have a discerning palate if you're Jacksonville right now. So I don't know who's going to come in and coach that mess. I wouldn't even pretend to know.
All right, the Arizona Cardinals.
The Arizona Cardinals, I think, also be a good fit for Mike McCoy. But I do agree with our guy in Chicago. I think the problem is, the good problem they have is that they're still playing. And so I think McCoy is probably the best fit in Arizona. And I think that that's your best fit, but I don't think that if they wait on these guys because of the playoffs, they might end up going with a Lovie or somebody else there. And I do agree that Arizona is the place that people go to die as coaches, just as Kansas City is the place where quarterbacks go to make a lot of money and die.
Absolutely. Well, finally, the Chicago Bears.
You know, I'm going to stick with my son. I still think Bruce Arians is the best fit up there in Chicago. And the fact of the matter is that you talk about leadership and breaking down how you control a room. The fact of the matter is most of these offensive coordinators don't have a lot of experience with that. And Bruce Arians, you can call it a fluke, but he had to take a team with a rookie quarterback and a coach that was on death's door, and he had to step in and deliver, and he did. I don't know how that's a fluke.
All right, well, real quickly here, and then we're going to take a break. I know that, Jeff, you're headed out to this year's 2013 Senior Bowl. Break that down for us, and what can we expect out there, and what are you hoping to see covering this year's Senior Bowl?
Well, the Senior Bowl is the most prestigious of the postseason college all-star games. It's where the NFL teams really congregate. It can be a convention for out-of-work coaches. A lot of coaching staffs are put together there, so as new teams name head coaches, they put together their staff from guys that are down there and networking. As far as the game itself, the practices are really where it's at. That's what NFL scouts want to see. A pretty good crop this year, although the trend has been recently that the top 5 to 10 players from a senior level usually end up bypassing the game due to injury concerns. Their agents don't want them to risk the chance, but it is a pretty good class this year, I think, especially from a defensive standpoint and also in the trenches on both offensive and defensive line. A number of good prospects. The underclassmen route, the hardship date to declare for the NFL draft is January 15th, which is next Tuesday. Today, we've got about 60 underclassmen who have elected to come out and pledge that they'll be part of that 2013 draft. So I'm interested to see from a senior class, really the line play, how those guys dominate. You see a lot of one-on-one individual workouts. I think that's where the value is. You see guys in their work habits after they've had a bad practice. How do they bounce back? How do they adapt? to NFL coaching because they really put them through NFL-type drills. The coaches this year are Jim Schwartz and his staff at Detroit and Dennis Allen and his staff with Oakland. So they'll put them through those workouts, and I think you can see a lot of things, how they interact with coaching and just how they respond. I'll be down there for the whole week, and I can give you some, we'll do some full reports. It's in preparation for putting together a draft guide that will be published in late March. And as always, the draft is always influenced by underclassmen. But just as a general rule of thumb, I think that the 2013 draft will be better than last year's in terms of overall talent, a little deeper, especially in the offensive and defensive lines. Also a good crop of linebackers that are coming out, and a nice group of wide receivers as well. Where I think it's a little light is the quarterback play, and the running backs are somewhat spotty.
Well, absolutely, and we're really excited to have you on after the Senior Bowl and to really break down everything that happened there in the Senior Bowl. Guys, we got to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to break down all of the playoff games of this weekend right here on The Balance. My minions, don't go away.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Here we go.
Blue 20! Blue 20!
Football. Catch the fever.
The sport of kings.
And now let's talk some football.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
All right, and we are going to be talking about playoffs. Welcome back, my minions. My name is Saul Marquis, El Presidente. The final half hour. We've been teasing it all week long. We've been teasing it all day long. And that's why we call it a teaser, because we bring you to the very final climax of the show, and it's playoffs. Who's going to be in the Super Bowl? We're going to break down all of the playoff games this next half hour. So stay right here with us, guys. And if you want to jump in the playoff conversation, give us a call. 917-889-8516 is the digit to talk with me and our panel of experts, Mr. Gene Walker of Indiana Talks and Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. Well, guys, we go out west to Mile High. It's minus 11 there this morning. Cold, cold, cold. Obviously, we could say maybe Peyton Manning doesn't have great experience there in the playoffs, or we could say Peyton Manning doesn't have great experience in the playoffs. But either which way, it's cold. How much of an effect is the temperature and Peyton Manning? He's had a great season in Denver. Obviously, a lot of people pick him as a favorite as an MVP. A lot of people look at, hey, we're going to see another matchup between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. But who at the end of the day will be the one who goes to the Super Bowl? So we're going to start with you, Gene. Peyton Manning out there. It's kind of weird seeing him in that number 18 orange uniform. I like the Broncos now via the Colts. I've always thought the Broncos were a good team, and I think John Elway's done a great job out there. Obviously, Peyton Manning saw something there that he could excel in. But it's playoffs. It's the Ravens. It's cold. It's mile high. Talk to us about the variables of this game.
Well, I've always had a theory, and it came to me when just coaching high school football, even for 11 years in two or three different states, that when two teams that are comparable play each other twice, you generally don't have a sweep. Six or seven times when I was coaching that situation, we had a split in the game. And only once was it a sweep. Our team happened to be, better than the team they were playing both times. Does that translate to pros? Not 100%. Pro football is a different beast. But I think that, maybe I'm out on a limb here, but look at the first game that they played this year where Baltimore lost 34-17. Looking back on that game, we see that Joe Flacco actually outperformed Peyton Manning in that football game, about 50, 60 yards more passing. He threw one more touchdown, but he also had two turnovers. One went for 7 points for Denver on the opposite side of the offensive sideline, if you will. The defense scored in special teams. And you also look at the fact that Denver in that game had no Sean Moreno running for over 100 yards, while Ray Rice had about 38. And I think that the key today is, Baltimore was at zero at halftime. So if Ray Rice can run the ball, that's a big if. If Ray Rice can get 100 to 135, 140 yards in the ground without the mistakes made by the two turnovers, I think this game's going to be closer than everybody acts like. I mean, this is a very cold game. We haven't seen Peyton Manning post-neck surgery in this kind of condition. And if you guys remember when he was a Colt, where was the place he struggled the most? He struggled in New England outside the dome when the weather was bad. Now, I know the way he's played this year is inspiring, and I know the way that defense has played has been headless. But this could be a very low-scoring football game. I don't think it's going to be 34-17 this time. I think both teams are going to score 21 points or less on both sides of the field if the Ravens defense can step up and keep Moreno from going over 100 yards. And if it is, in fact, a low-scoring game in that really cold temperature, who does that favor? That favors the Ravens, actually. The Ravens are better in a low-scoring game than Denver. I still think Denver's the better team. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I think that Denver's defense isn't better than Baltimore's. But I just think that whenever you look at the NFL and you look at a give-me situation, the give-me situation comes back to bite you in the tail 8 times out of 10. And this might be one of those games. I think the weather doesn't help Peyton Manning at all. I think if it was a mild game, maybe a little bit different story.
Well, certainly the Ravens have their work cut out for them. And the Broncos come into this game as the number one seed in the AFC, and certainly one of the hottest teams in the NFL. And Peyton Manning is certainly a big contributor of that. Jeff, so what are your thoughts? Break this down. The Broncos, the Ravens, does the weather play a part? And are we going to see, in this game, does it determine on whether or not Peyton Manning truly has made a return?
Well, Gene's take was very interesting. I see it different, though. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think that Baltimore's defense is a little bit of a paper tiger. I think they've really went as far as they could. Three out of the four playoff matchups this weekend are rematches, and I see that most of them are going to go the same way they did the first time around. I think that Denver is clearly the better team. I think that Baltimore can put some points on the scoreboard. I like Joe Flacco. I like Ray Rice, although I think that both can be turnover prone. Rice isn't really a fumbler, but he had a couple last week. Flacco can be inconsistent. If he's on, he can be very dangerous, but he can also put the ball up for grabs. I think that that Denver just across the board is the better squad. I do find it interesting, though, that Peyton Manning is going to be wearing the gloves today, and I'll be curious to see how that affects his grip on the ball, and I think that's one of the things that he mentioned. It's a little bit of a different feel, and that with the temperatures being so extreme, that it's something that he normally hasn't used, obviously, in his career, and we'll see how that affects him. I think that he is a guy who elevates the play of other members of the offense. Eric Decker at wide receiver, pretty good underrated wide receiver, but has had just a standout year with Manning being at quarterback. Marino, as far as he was a former first rounder, a lot of people thought he was a bust, and he really hasn't done much until this year. He's had a lot of injuries that kind of got him when he was in college at Georgia, but he's been able to put together a pretty consistent season. I just like the matchup all the way around the home field. I think that Baltimore was hard-pressed. Had Indianapolis been able to score a touchdown on one of those drives in the red zone last week, I think that they may have been the team that advanced. So I think that Denver will win. I would not be surprised to see Baltimore's offense be able to put some points on the board.
And I agree. I honestly don't see Baltimore doing a lot in this scenario. And I don't necessarily agree that it's going to be a low-scoring game either. But joining us now, Mr. $2 Bill, Josh. Josh, I know you have some thoughts on this Peyton Manning game today. Ravens, Baltimore, obviously the Broncos have beat the Ravens once this year. But what are your thoughts on this playoff game today, the Broncos and the Ravens?
Well, I'm going to go with Peyton Manning and the Broncos, even though I disagree with what our good friend just said. Part of the reason Indianapolis couldn't score last week was because the Ravens' defense is so stout. Here's where I give the advantage to the Broncos. Has nothing to do with being a mile-high stadium. Both teams are used to the cold. Both teams are used to weird altitude and weird things going on with the weather. Peyton Manning wants to prove that he's better than Eli. He may not come out and publicly say it, but it kills Peyton Manning that Eli has two rings and the quote-unquote great one only has one. So I think for that fact only, I'm going to take Denver 27, Baltimore 24.
Well, I tell you what, there's a bet of the wedgie online here, I think, between the two of you. You guys gotta probably know when they get together, when the Mannings get together the holidays, and you've got Eli, you've got Archie, you've got Peyton. I'm sure it both in family football that all families do. They play football on holidays. I know we do it. It's a tradition. Can you imagine the two? No, I can't. My agent says I can't do this in my clause over here. Go ahead, have a good time. That sort of thing going on. In the playoffs, it's got to be neat. It's got to be fun at the same time. Obviously, they're both very, very competitive people. So, Jeff, we'll start with you. Broncos or Ravens? And what's your score prediction there?
I'm going to say Denver 27, Baltimore 17.
Gene, what is your prediction, Baltimore or Denver, and your score?
I am going to go with Denver getting by maybe something like, 17 to 10.
Well, I tell you, Josh just gave us his prediction. I think Denver's going to win this game, although I do agree with a lot with what you said about how a lot of this bodes well for the Ravens. And we've seen Peyton play in the playoffs, and we've seen Peyton play with the Colts at Mile High. Now, certainly a lot of things have different are going on here, but I still think the Broncos can win this game. I don't think that the Ravens are going to be able to put a lot of points up on the board, though. I could be totally wrong. I mean, Ray Lewis is cleared to play, but I don't know how much of damage the Ravens can play against the Broncos. So I think, obviously, we look at the Broncos moving on into the AFC Championship, like I said here before. So I think the Broncos are going to win, and I'm going to go with somewhere around the 21 mark for the Broncos and a 21-10 game for the score. So that's my prediction, and we'll certainly brag about them as we move on. So we're going to be talking about today's games, and then we'll get in tomorrow's games. So that moves us over to the NFC, the Packers and the 49ers. Now, I have said all along on this show, even before the 49ers became a good in the playoffs that they are, that the 49ers and the Patriots are going to be your Super Bowl bound team. So I certainly am maintaining that at the moment. So the Packers, the 49ers, we're going to start with you, Gene. The 49ers and the Packers will meet Saturday afternoon in Green Bay. Obviously, temperature, again, maybe not as big of an issue as it is out there in Denver, But the first meeting didn't quite go so hot. If we remember that game, the Packers lost 30-22 in the now number two seed in the NFC. The 49ers tore the Packers up on the ground in September, rushing for over 180 yards. So different team, the Packers now, than what they were back then?
Well, they're a little different. I don't know how much different they are in the rushing category, but as the season went on, it's been amazing to me how, just truly how great Aaron Rodgers must be. I mean, I know that everybody's gone on and on about him over the years, and they should, but I think maybe what you should do is go on and on about him when the running game really isn't there. This is not a team that can count on 75 to 100 yards from said player. Even when you go by committee, it doesn't seem like they have great stats in that department either. They've had a couple games where they've done well, but overall it's been basically, here's Aaron Rodgers, stop this guy. If you do that, you win. He had a good game against San Francisco week one. San Francisco did nothing to stop him, and they still lost the game, though. And I talked about how a player still exceeds and his team still loses, and that's what happened with Green Bay. But I like Green Bay's chances in this game. San Francisco, down the stretch of the season, basically was only exposed in one way. What do you do when you play a good quarterback or you play a good up-and-coming quarterback? That being, of course, Tom Brady. That being, of course, Russell Wilson. The fact of the matter is San Francisco defense wasn't effective at all. And this was their stalwart at the beginning of the year. And if holding them to 22 is the best they could do then, I'm not so sure they do it this time around. I think Green Bay's got a really good upside coming in this ballgame. I think the fact that the one thing they had to answer with that hurt defense is, could they hold Adrian Peterson? It's amazing to think that holding Adrian Peterson is 99 yards, but that's just the way it is. He's been in beast mode all year. So I like what Green Bay is doing right now. I don't like the injuries to the defense, San Francisco, and the potential injury that we're talking about that could happen. And I don't like the fact that San Francisco, even though I like this Kaepernick kid, this is his first playoff game. And it is a different deal when you're playing a one-and-done against a guy like Rodgers.
I totally agree with you. And I honestly, though, I like the Packers. I like them more because they're actually on at Lambeau. Had the tables been turned a little bit differently, I still think this could be a Packers game. So we're going to move over to you, Jeff. Now, Jeff, I know you despise the Packers, so my guess is I already know who you're going to pick. But let's look at this game. If you can do it in a completely biased nature, the Packers, the 49ers.
Yeah, well, a couple things here. That is the second game tonight, and it actually is at Candlestick Park, San Francisco.
Oh, my fault. I thought it was in Green Bay, so go ahead.
But I have great respect for the Packers. I don't really like them, but I echo what Gene said about Aaron Rodgers. I think he's clearly at the top of the elite level when we talk about elite quarterbacks in the NFL. And something that folks may not realize is he has been hit and sacked as many times as anybody else in the league this year. We talked earlier about the Bears and Jay Cutler and how ineffective the Chicago offensive line was. Green Bay has had to mix and match up front all season long. And they have no running game to speak of. They kind of mix and match there as well. But Rodgers, through just his instincts, getting rid of the ball quickly, he's got a pretty good receiving core, although they've suffered some injuries there. They should be at pretty full strength tonight with Randall Cobb back in action to supplement both Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings. It's just a remarkable tribute as how instinctive he is and sees the field and has the vision to put the ball in tight spots and get rid of it before the rush comes in. I think it's going to be the best game of the four. It's the second game tonight, and I think it definitely will be worth staying up for. I think it could come down to a late field goal on either side. On paper, I think San Francisco may be the most well-balanced team offensively, defensively. They do have a little bit of a question on special teams where David Akers, their field goal kicker, has had an inconsistent season. Big leg, but it's not been his best year. They have Billy Cundiff as well. I think they're going with Akers, though, tonight, and I think he could have a chance to send them on to the NFC Championship game. But I think it's going to be another high-scoring game with both teams having an opportunity. The Packers' defense has also been beset by injuries here late in the year. The point about Kaepernick really playing in his first playoff game, I think that that will be a factor, and it will be interesting to see how effective. I think they're going to lean heavily on Frank Gore and try to move the chains consistently and really go with a ball control possession offense where you see Vernon Davis have some opportunities as well down the seam. So I think both teams will be able to score on one another pretty easily. But it'll come down to maybe a key turnover or a late field goal. I give San Francisco the slightest of edges, but I would not be shocked at all if Green Bay pulls it out. And the reason is really Aaron Rodgers. I think he's that valuable at the quarterback position.
And one can certainly argue that Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest quarterbacks of our time. And I know there's other quarterbacks that you could have in that conversation, Eli Manning, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. But certainly I think that as far as consistency and a guy who's really proved himself is Aaron Rodgers at the Green Bay Packers. And, of course, the Packers have found a new running game that I think has really worked for them and has opened up some things for Rodgers in the passing game, which has allowed them to score 21-plus points in a game. So $2 bill, Josh, the Packers, the 49ers, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have much respect for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and they did win the Super Bowl just 2 years ago. But they're walking into the Candlestick Park at San Francisco. The 49ers have unfinished business. They should have been in the Super Bowl last year. They should have represented the NFC, not the New York Giants. The Giants kind of stole that game. I think Jim Harbaugh is going to get Colin Kaepernick focused in, zeroed in, put all the noise aside. And I think the 49ers are going to win tonight. And I think if they don't, it won't even take 30 seconds after the game's over. Somebody's going to question Jim Harbaugh going with Colin Kaepernick over Alex Smith, who did get him to the NFC Championship game last year. So maybe for Jim Harbaugh, a little bit of his job might be on the line. If he loses this game because he went with Kaepernick, maybe his seat gets a little hot in San Fran next year.
Well, I think Jim Harbaugh's job is definitely secure. Now, here's the thing. I picked the San Francisco to go to the Super Bowl against the Patriots. So, obviously, my pick remains the same, although I do like the Packers in this game. And I think Packer pick, man, that's a hockey name. We'll probably make a few bad throws, and obviously the Packer defense. I agree with what Jeff said. We're going to have a tight game here, but I still think that the 49ers are going to be able to pull this out in somewhere around a 28-29-30 game. It's going to be very, very close. But I do think we're going to see some points on the board, and I certainly think that the 49ers pull this out with a squeak as well. So, Gene, who's your pick between the 49ers and the Packers?
Just looking back to the season, guys, they played, Forte a couple times, the Bears. I'm not trying to get their bear guy there. They won those games. You look at Houston against Arian Foster. Packers won that game. You look at St. Louis with Steven Jackson. They won that game. I mean, you go through the list of games here, even with Adrian Peterson, they won 2 out of 3 with the best running back in the NFL. And so now, are we going to put Frank Gore in that category? At moments, Frank Gore does look like that. He had over 100 yards in their opening week win. Does Frank Gore have that same kind of game today? I think that it is going to be the running game that's going to have to get San Francisco through it. I'm not so sure it happens. I like the Packers on the road to go into Frisco and win.
All right, Jeff, what are your thoughts? I know you kind of gave us your peek on your hand on who your pick is, but go ahead and tell us who your official pick and score is. Jeff, are you with us? Well, maybe we've lost Jeff. Jeff, are you still with us? Well, hopefully we'll get Jeff back here in just a moment. We'll see if we can't get him back on the line. Now, Josh, did you give us your official pick and score?
No, I'm sorry. I'm you cut out for a minute, so I'm not even sure what game we're talking about.
The 49ers and the Packers. What's your official pick and score?
Niners 28, Packers 27.
All right. Jeff, do we have you back?
Tom, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. No worries. So what is your official pick? Obviously, you gave us a little bit of a peek, but what is your official pick and score for the Packers and 49ers?
Yeah, I'll take the 49ers 27-24 on a late field goal.
All right, guys, we got tomorrow's game. I'm going to give each of you guys about a one-minute, minute-and-a-half rant on each of these games because then we've got to wrap it up here. So we'll start with you, Jeff. Looking at tomorrow's games, give us about a minute peek into these games and who you think is going to win these two games.
Okay, Seattle at Atlanta. I like the Seahawks here. I may be the only one, but I think the role continues. They're a hot ball club. I like what Russell Wilson as a rookie, the veteran poise and leadership, strong running game with Marshawn Lynch. The defense is underrated with a lot of big thumpers, especially in the back seven. They will be hurt by the loss of defensive end Chris Clemons, their best pass rusher, who went down on that awful field in Washington last week. He's lost for the season. But I like the way the Seahawks are playing. This is an important game for Atlanta as well because they have been a team that is somewhat folded under pressure the last couple of years in the playoffs when they've had home field advantage. I have not been sold on the Falcons all year, so I'm going to stick with the underdog Seattle Seahawks to go into the Georgia Dome and upset the Falcons on in a game that may not be quite as close as what the score will indicate. I'll take the Seahawks 21-17. As far as Houston and New England, I think the Patriots are clearly the better squad there. I'm not sure what's happened to Houston in the last half of the season after getting off to that hot start, including a game in Chicago that was heavily anticipated. They beat the Bears 13-7 in a rainstorm. And from that point on, it's been all thumbs down for the Houston Texans. The loss of Brian Cushing hurts them, but Matt Schaub has been a turnover machine the last few weeks. I don't see how they can go in and really reverse that trend. I don't think that they played that well in the win over Cincinnati last week. And, in fact, had the Bengals been somewhat effective on offense, Houston would have been a loser in a wild card matchup on their own home field. So I think the arrow clearly points to Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, New England returning to the AFC Championship game. I see the Patriots winning that game pretty handily, and I'll say a score of 31-14 over Houston.
All right, Gene, you got about a minute to give us a peek at tomorrow's games and your picks.
The only reason Seattle's even in this game is because Mike Shanahan thought it would be a good idea to watch his star quarterback from the end of the first quarter on pop around like a pogo stick and watch everybody defend this guy for an entire week. It's just been absolutely embarrassing. Chris Clemons is out. Atlanta does have something to prove. I agree with that. They're going to prove it today. Atlanta's going to win this game by a score of 31-20, and I think we're finally going to get rid of the sexy pick, and I can't wait. And remember, Atlanta did beat the Redskins this year as well, but they barely did it when they played them. As far as the second game goes, this is going to be a closer game. Pro sports always dictates that when two comparable teams play each other and there was an embarrassment the first time, it's a much different route the second time. But Gronkowski is there. I like the Patriots to win that game by a final of somewhere around 35-24.
All right, Josh, real quickly, a real quick minute on tomorrow's games.
I'm going to stick with Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks because I think Russell Wilson, and I know a lot of Colts fans are going to disagree, is the best rookie quarterback in the National Football League. And I'm not sold on Matt Ryan. Atlanta Falcons had the home field advantage for it, got beaten in the first round, and the upset special of the weekend. I'm going to pick the Houston Texans to look the New England Patriots square in the face and send the Patriots home 19-17 on a last-second field goal.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to pretty much wrap up our talk. We're going to jump into the jungle real quick here. I'm going to give each of you guys 15 seconds in the jungle to rant about whatever you guys want to rant about and go. We'll start with you, Jeff. Go.
Okay, Major League Baseball, Hall of Fame voting, nobody elected. They need to restructure that voting system. And the NCAA should do something about revamping the rules book. It's not fair for college coaches to be able to do whatever they want to, and players have to sit out if they want to transfer.
All right, Gene, go.
I absolutely go back to what I said before. It's time for Shanahan to take accountability to what he did to RG3 and possibly his career last year. And I do agree with the writers as well. Those guys couldn't play sports, so they're taking it on a guy like Craig Bijou is absolutely embarrassing.
Well, you guys absolutely took my rant, so I'm going to go right along with you guys. Absolutely, I agree that the writers should not have, I mean, made the right decision this time. Guys, they cheated the game. They shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. That's just my opinion. That's just my thoughts. They shouldn't be in the game. And, guys, Atlanta wins. New England wins. And it's going to be a Manning-Brady showdown again. That's going to do it, guys, for us here at The Balance. We're going to see you next week. Remember, IU today at noon. And then this afternoon is the Ravens and the Broncos. And this evening is the Packers and the 49ers, guys. Remember not to drink and drive. It's not cool. We'll see you next Saturday right here on The Balance.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.